Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hi, I'm David Maister, and this is Lessons I've Learned. This particular series is about how to develop your business through marketing, client service, and client relationships. With this eighth podcast in the series of 14, we move from the topic of impressing the client on your current assignment towards the topic of growing a relationship with an existing client. This episode is called The Rules of Romance, Building Relationships, and is based upon material contained in my book, The Trusted Advisor. Business relationships have much in common with the relationships we try to build in our personal lives. For example, think of how you behave, or once behaved, in trying to build a relationship with your romantic partner. To build a strong relationship, you try to be understanding, thoughtful, considerate, sensitive to feelings, and supportive. It turns out that all of these adjectives apply equally well to what is needed to build a strong business relationship. Fortunately, there are some key principles of relationship building that apply in both personal and professional life. Let's examine a few of them. First, the principle is go first. To earn a relationship, you must go first. You must give a favor to earn a favor. The one you're trying to influence must visibly perceive that you are willing to be the first to make an investment in the relationship in order to earn and deserve what you want back. Does this feel risky? It should, because it is. It's about taking the risk of rejection. In business, it doesn't feel very different from the way it felt back in high school in the field of romance. You gotta ask somebody for a date. My wife, Kathy, showed a profound understanding of this principle in the very early days of our courtship. I had told her that I was due to do some work in Egypt. She very much wanted to come along, but it was too early in the relationship to ask directly for such a big favor, which might have been received as too far, too fast, too soon. So, without referring to the trip, she offered to cook me a meal one evening. When I showed up for the date, I discovered that Kathy had cooked a complete Egyptian-style meal, served on a Middle Eastern carpet, Egyptian music was playing, and there were a couple of tourist guides to Egypt on the table. Now, how do you react to something like that? It was devastatingly irresistible. The message was unspoken, but as loud and as clear as a bell. I'm willing to work to deserve your goodwill, and it's going to be fun to have a relationship with me. Naturally, we went on the trip together. The second principle is illustrate, don't tell. To make anyone believe something about you, you must demonstrate what you want them to believe, not assert it. What you claim about yourself, your colleagues, or your firm will always be received skeptically if it is listened to at all. My wife didn't make promises and protestations about why I would enjoy taking her along. She showed me. A similar example in business life is given by a professional firm which was competing for some work from the Wells Fargo Bank. It arranged for its proposal to be delivered to the bank in leather saddlebags. They also had one of their proposals to Domino's Pizza delivered by one of their people dressed up as a Domino's delivery person. The professional firm was trying to send a clear message that we are trying to treat you as special and unique. Such tactics are not tacky or effective in themselves. They are effective because they're part of a pattern of gestures which reinforce the message that we're trying to treat you as special. Isolated tactics as standalone things will quickly be seen as insincere. But if you are really trying, it shows. A primary goal of any relationship building activity is to create opportunities to demonstrate that you have something to contribute. There's no better way to do this than to actually start contributing. In other words, if you really want the client to believe that you can be helpful, you actually have to be helpful in some small way. So the rule is this. Before you go into any meeting with a client or a prospective client, figure out the one or two or three things you want the client to absolutely believe about you by the end of the meeting. Then you must figure out in advance precisely how you are going to demonstrate to that person that you are those things. Don't tell them, show them. Don't wing it. If the client is to be convinced of something, you need to be very prepared to demonstrate it convincingly. For example, your questions can reveal that you've done your homework. You can say, I know by the research we've done on your firm that you merged with ABC 9 years ago to become the third largest in the world. What I'd like to learn more about you is how you cope with the integration challenges of employees from so many cultures and backgrounds. Or you could say, I read the speech you gave your trade association on this subject, and I've reviewed your company's press releases. What I don't know is what kind of options you're considering that may be too delicate for public consumption. Such questions give evidence that you are thorough, that you respect the client's time enough to be prepared, and that you are ready to get right to the issues. You are seen to be trying to earn the client's business. Small gestures can count as much as big ones, as long as they don't become too rote. Take the issue of proving or demonstrating that you care about the relationship and value it. We will again use the parallel with romantic relationships. You get a certain amount of credit for remembering your romantic partner's birthday, your anniversary, and so on. But consider the effect of showing up at home on a random weekday of no particular significance with a gift for your spouse. You hand it over and you say something like, "There's no particular reason for this, but I was just thinking of you and how much I love and appreciate you, and I wanted to make a small gesture of thank you for all you do for me." Now that's relationship building. Wouldn't you all agree that in personal life that would really work? Well, the business equivalent should also be obvious. Why not, on a random day of no particular significance, call your client and say, "I've been thinking about you, and I ran across some information that made me start thinking, and I have an idea for you. I don't think it necessarily involves us or more work for us. I just wanted to contribute the idea to you." What are you demonstrating by this action? That you care, that you're thinking about the client in the client's terms, not just what it does for you, and that you are a source of ideas, sometimes good, sometimes not so good, and that you are someone with whom they will want to stay in touch. Not a bad set of outcomes for such a simple action. The next principle of relationship building is that you must listen for what is different, not for what's familiar. At the core of earning someone's trust is convincing them that you're dealing with them as a human being and not as a member of a group or a class or a subset. Accordingly, as you listen to a client talk, the question on your mind should be, what makes this person different from any other client I've served? What does that mean for what I should say and how I should behave? Unfortunately, this is hard work. The natural tendency of most of us is to do the exact opposite. We listen for things we recognize and have met before so that we can draw upon past experience and use the words, approaches, and tools that we already know well. It's the way most of us work, but it doesn't always serve us well. Before you can help someone, you need to understand what's on their mind. You must create situations where they will tell you more about their issues, concerns, and needs. When you're on a date and want to impress the other person, you don't just think of tricks aimed at getting the other person to do or think something. That's manipulation and is easily detectable and rejected. Your goal is, or at least it should be, to find out as much as you can about the interests, tastes, preferences, likes and dislikes of this other individual person, to experience them on their own terms, not yours and not anyone else's. These are not moral points. This is a practical point. If you want this other person to respond to you, then you must understand more about them. Only by finding out more about them can you discover how to be more effective by understanding what will be truly appreciated by this person. Only then can you learn what this individual person responds to, i.e., how to get them to like you. One of the most dangerous sentences in any language is one that begins, "What clients want is." No matter how you finish that statement, you will be wrong. The whole point is that clients are and want to be treated as unique individuals. The same is true in romance. There's no valid to the conclusion what women want or what men want is. The essence is treating the other person as a person. The next principle is, be sure your advice is being sought. One of the biggest mistakes that advisors make is to think that their client always wants their advice. This is dangerously wrong. Again, the secrets of a great relationship are instructive here. I know of a married couple, highly educated and both successful professionals who cannot resist solving or trying to solve each other's problems. One of them will come home from work clearly troubled and under stress and describe the difficulties they're having at work. Immediately, the other partner switches into solution mode. "Well, what you should do is X, Y, and Z," that other person responds. The first person says, "You don't understand. I can't do that because of A, B, and C." "Then do 1, 2, and 3," is the next comment. Very quickly, the argument, and it is an argument, is getting very heated, emotions are rising, and resentments are building. While the advice giver is well-intentioned when presented with a problem, solve it, the advice receiver is getting upset because he or she actually didn't want any advice. What the advice receiver wanted was a combination of a sympathetic ear, emotional support, an understanding of the difficulties faced, and the opportunity to collect his or her own thoughts by talking them through in a non-threatening environment. This scenario applies, whether we like it or not, without modification, to business environments and all professions. All people, including clients, want affirmation, approval, support, and appreciation. You must be ready to deal with your clients not just as the source of problems and cash, but as people who have all the feelings we have just described. In order to get your client to listen to and accept your advice, you must develop the skills and behavior patterns to ensure that you provide all of these things along with your advice. Like the overeager spouse, you must learn to hold back the temptation to say early on, "I know how to solve your problems, you need to do the following." You may be right, but you will fail as a trusted advisor, and your advice will probably not be accepted. Clients don't always want advice, they often just want a sympathetic ear. Next principle, earn the right to offer advice. In romance, there are rules of sequence. Certain stages of the relationship are not appropriate until other stages have been met and passed through. Just as there are expectations that are unreasonable on a first date, but not after the fifth year, there are expectations in business that vary by the stage of the relationship. The most common violation of this principle is the rush to give answers. We assume that the client and advisor is all about asking for and receiving technical expertise. The next principle is earning the right to give advice. Before the client will listen to your advice, he or she must feel that you truly understand their situation. In fact, earning the right has three parts. Number one, deeply understanding the client's situation. Number two, understanding how the client feels about it. And number three, convincing the client that we understand both of the previous two items, that we have in fact listened. We must in fact keep asking. The recommendation to ask a lot of questions, shut up and listen, has been given often, 1,000 times, but cannot be stressed enough. In business conversations, as in romantic conversations, people don't always say what they mean. When your spouse says, "Would you like to have Chinese food tonight?" it's not always necessarily a question. Just as frequently, it could be a request. "Please, let's have Chinese food tonight." Or even an instruction. "Can we for once, please, finally have Chinese food instead of Italian all the time?" Life would be easier if people always said precisely what they mean, but they don't. People hint a lot. Similarly, there's some ambiguity in such client statements as, "I'm not sure that will work." This could mean any of 100 things, including, "I don't like the idea." Or, "I like it, but I don't think I could sell it to my colleagues." Or, "It could work, but not in the form you've presented it." Or, "I'm not convinced yet, but tell me more." Or it could mean, "Drop the subject now, or you're really going to start annoying me." The skill of being good at relationships is framing the right gentle follow-up question so that you probe further and get the other person to open up so that you understand them better. How does the following sound compared to a stark, "You don't think it'll work, why not?" Instead, you could say, "Yes, I could see some ways in which that idea might not work here. Say more about it, would you please? What in particular makes you uncomfortable with it?" This should get the client to clarify his or her reactions and give us some guidance about where to go next. Just as to your spouse, you might say, "Oh, if you want Chinese, that'll be fine by me. Personally, I never get tired of Italian, but if you want to change, let's go for it." How would that work? How would you say it? What are the words that work for you? The The next principle in relationships is try to say what you mean. It's not only clients who are ambiguous and hint a lot. We do too. To be an effective advice giver, you must work at making sure that what you intended to say was actually heard that way. The most common form of communication breakdown and a major source of lost trust is misunderstanding about what's been said. How many times in professional or personal life has the following exchange taken place? You missed your deadline. It wasn't a deadline. I gave you an estimate of when I thought it could be ready. Well, that's not what I thought you said. Why didn't you say it that way in the beginning? Never assume the other person is a mind reader. Say what you want and think. Hints won't work. One person may say, "The baby's crying again, dear." And the other responds by saying, "Yes, how frustrating for you to have to get out of bed again. Good luck." If you need something from the other person, ask politely. It's not enough to say, "I'm having a little difficulty with your staff getting me the information I need." Hint, hint. This standalone statement won't always get you what you want. The client might reply, "Well, they're busy doing other things. Work around it." You need to be clear and unequivocal and say something like, "Would you be willing to drop them a memo or talk to them about the importance of this? If we have to work around them, it will delay the work and add to the budget. And we really don't want that to happen unless that's what you want us to do. How would you like us to proceed?" Note that with this language, the advisor is not just rolling over and playing dead to the client. Being a client's trusted advisor does not mean doing whatever the client wants. In fact, the truth is quite the opposite. Great trusted advisors can be relied upon to tell the client the bad news along with the good. They can be relied upon to tell the truth. However, they can also be relied upon, as in all relationships, to phrase it with tact and care. The final principle of relationships that we'll explore is the need to show an interest in the person that you are dealing with. There's no more certain way to make somebody think you are fascinated and enjoyable to be with than to keep them talking about themselves. This is not or should not be some phony, ingratiating tactic, although it can be used that way. Rather, it's a way of learning as much as possible about the person so you can figure out the right way to say things that they will listen to. If you want to influence someone, you must find out what influences them, or at least how they are likely to be influenced. The only way to do this is to ask questions, more questions, and even more questions. When someone says, "I think this," the appropriate answer is not, "Well, I think that." Instead, you need to find out why they think what they do. So you have to ask, "Why do you think that?" Or, "What led you to that conclusion?" Or, "Do you think it's always true or just in certain circumstances?" The more they answer these questions, the more you will understand them and the more you will be able to find the right thing to say that will be both helpful and be acceptable. An important part of trusting is having the feeling that this person understands me. These questions flow naturally if we do in fact have a genuine interest in the other person. Not only must we ask questions, but we must also remember the answers. This sounds like trivial advice, but it's not. Some people can encounter someone they haven't met for months or years and remember everything they ever said or did. Having seen this in action, we can report that it's amazingly powerful. People are amazed because it's so uncommon. They have the reaction of, "Wow, they must have been really interested in me to have remembered that minor comment." There's a difference in being polite and being interested, and the difference is transparent to the observer. Simple devices like taking notes and reviewing them before the next meeting can help a lot. There's nothing wrong with having some support tools to help you get good at this. The goal here is not to fake an interest that is not there, but to use whatever tools you need to help you show that you are really paying attention. Now, of course, there are many other principles of relationships. We cannot cover all of them. But I hope what we've done here has got you to think about the fact that you are always serving a person, no matter how large is the corporation that may be actually writing the check for you, and that your success will be built upon the depth of the relationship that you are able to build with the person that you serve. Coming up in this series, we will talk about a lot of things that you have to do to generate and win new clients. I'm David Maister, and this has been Lessons I've Learned. Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, go to my website, davidmaister.com, where you'll find many other resources covering these and many other topics.